I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Good morning, John Hancock.
Top of the morning.
Did you ever call time and temperature back in the day?
I did, and my wife used to work there.
Is she the person who would answer the thing and tell you what time it was?
No. It was an automated thing or whatever it was. The company was called the Telephone Doctor.
The Telephone Doctor?
And their main business was that they would teach companies how to train their person who answered the phone to deal with customers.
Right.
Which is now a, lost art.
Yeah.
Because everybody that answers the phone now is a AI.
Yeah. Well, interesting. I remember calling time and temperature. It seemed like something you did at least once a week. You'd call and see what the temperature was.
Yeah, and they had a good little business there, the Telephone Doctor. I wonder whatever happened to those folks.
Well, time moves on. Hey, buddy,
So does temperature.
Yeah, we've got a lot to hop into. So let's get into the politics of the week.
Must we?
Yes. First of all, I don't know if you saw this, but Donald Trump, our president, announced the other day that he received the Nobel Peace Prize.
It's about time.
Not his own, but the the story. Can you believe this? I mean, that we have such a petulant child in the White House that he took the Nobel Peace Prize from somebody else who won it because he believes he should have one?
Well, I don't think he got the actual prize, right?
No, she gave him the medal.
Oh, he got
the
medal.
She didn't give him the money.
No, right.
No,
right.
He's stealing enough of that. No, I'm kidding. He's got a medal, and she gave him the Nobel Peace Prize. I don't know how you feel about it, but I was curious if you'll give over your spelling bee championship from the eighth grade.
No, it would be the second grade.
I feel like I deserve one.
That would be the second grade, Frostfield Elementary School. I remember it well, Michael.
what?
There I was.
Yeah.
Me and a young lady. I can't remember who the second grade girl was.
Did you beat her?
I did. Yeah. I believe the word was chameleon.
Oof.
And I laid a little chameleon on her.
Lay it on us right now.
I can't do it. chameleon. Is that a C-H or a C-A? Frank?
It's not an easy word.
We need your help here. C-H-A-M... E-L.
Yeah.
E-A-N.
Needless to say,
E-O-N.
You probably won't be winning a spelling bee prize anymore. You'll have to get it from somebody else. But
how impressive, though, was it for a second grader to spell
chameleon?
Chameleon.
Yeah, that is impressive.
I can't do it now as a 61-year-old man, but I did it back in 1972.
But to the larger point here, it is a little ridiculous, right, that the most powerful human being on the planet has been obsessed with some type of metal that comes from Europe, that he would make such a temper tantrum that a past winner would come and give him a medal. Now, let's be honest. She's not pure-handed here. She'd like to be appointed the new head of Venezuela.
Right. Yeah, and that's the whole thing. Maria Corina Machado gave Donald Trump her medal, and she would like to be the leader of Venezuela. This is a really interesting, unprecedented situation because the United States is effectively trying to run that country. We're already selling the oil from Venezuela, yet the Nicolas Maduro's vice president is ostensibly the leader of the country. And she gave remarks yesterday and really kind of tried to walk a fine line as it relates to Donald Trump. But it remains to be seen what's gonna happen here. And if the past means anything, whenever the United States has gone into a country and taken over and attempted to nation build, it's not gone well. And the further you get away, the military operation in Venezuela was an unmitigated success. It was you know, as our military does. It was done cleanly, with no loss of American lives. But when you get further down the field on how you're going to govern and manage and deal with the country, I fear this is not going to end well.
Well, when the invasion took place and they pulled out the dictator, brought him to the United States, Josh Hawley was our own senator from right here in Missouri, was one of the first people to stand up and say, wait a minute, man, we're invading other countries. There really ought to be some protections here. The president of the United States is required under the Constitution to show up and ask Congress to declare some type of war and War Power Act. That vote came down yesterday. Josh Hawley, who had kind of shown a little bit of backbone, well, he wiggled back on that and suddenly went into the camp of Donald Trump.
Yeah, that was a puzzle for me because I gave Senator Hawley a lot of credit for standing up and supporting what I think is pretty clear, that the War Powers Act requires the Congress to declare war. And if you believe that bombing a country and going in and seizing their leader is an act of war, then the president shouldn't be able unilaterally to do something like that. And typically, throughout our history, the president lays out before the American people the rationale for military action before he goes in. You'll remember the liberation of Kuwait under George H.W. Bush.
Do I ever?
And he went and had a national address to the American people. It talked about what was going to happen. And then within days, that bombing started. So that didn't happen here. And I thought Hawley deserved to get some credit for standing up with four other Republicans and voting for this War Powers resolution. He says he has subsequently met with the White House and that the White House assured him there was no grounds for further military action in Venezuela. And so he reversed his position.
But let me remind you, last week you said, hey, I think Josh Hawley is not doing this just to run for president. I think he's got some real principles behind him. And
I
said, I think he has the backbone of a jellyfish.
You did.
I feel as though I am being proven to be correct. And Josh Hawley is just doing what Josh Hawley does, putting his finger in the air and going which way the wind goes.
Well, things are not always what they seem, Michael.
Yeah. Speaking of what they may not always seem, when we had that terrible shooting, murder that took place in Minneapolis with the ICE officers as a result of that, nearly nightly we seem to have protests now on the streets of Minneapolis. Donald Trump and the White House saying they're going to impose the Insurrection Act. I don't know if that's ever even been implemented in my lifetime. Has it?
1992, after the Rodney King riots in Los Angeles, it was implemented. Before that, you've got to go back to the Civil Rights era and the integration of schools in Mississippi and Alabama. It was initiated. And then before that, you go back to President Grant. During the Reconstruction era and prior to that, President Lincoln. So it's not been oft used in the United States.
What's it mean if it gets used? Does it mean that elections can be suspended?
Well, there's a lot of concern about that being expressed, but I don't. I certainly don't expect our elections are going to be suspended.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
That guy over there is John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. You're listening to Total Information AM. And John, I was out and about this week and vaguely remember you telling me a story of a brush with greatness. Tell me about it.
Well, so, you know, I'm a ragtime aficionado and spent my youth studying the history of ragtime music, and so much of it courses through Missouri. And Scott Joplin, who composed The Entertainer, Maple Leaf Rag, many other pieces, lived here for a time. But his publisher was in Sedalia, Missouri. It was a guy named John Stillwell Stark. Hmm. And Joplin, who was 30 at the time, met John Stark, who was 58. Stark was white, Joplin African-American, and they hit it off. Stark published the Maple Leaf Rag. It became one of the biggest selling pieces of sheet music in American history. And a year after the publication, less than a year, John Stark moved from Sedalia, Missouri, where he had a music store, and he moved to St. Louis. He bought his printing company, the company he used to print the music, because he was unhappy with their quality, and he bought them. And so he was a music publisher and a printer. They had a shop on Laclede Avenue in St. Louis City, and continued to publish music through the early 1920s. And then Ragtime's popularity left, and someone, probably John Stark's son, focused that business on printing, commercial printing. And the John Stark Printing Company eventually moved to a large plant on Manchester, just west of 270 out in St. Louis County. And for years, they were a printer of, they did all the point of purchase displays for Anheuser-Busch all over the country. It was a big operation, and it lasted for four generations of the John Stark family. So I walk into the UPS store in my neighborhood the other day, and I'm sending a thing, and so the young kid behind the counter, I look at his name tag, and it says Jack Stark. So I said, any relation to the Stark family printing company? He said, yeah. He said, and that's my dad over there. So he's the franchisee of the UPS.
Oh, man.
And he's also the family historian. So he and I spent the next half an hour talking about that amazing Missouri family.
That's incredible. Do they have any of the original copies or publishing?
Oh, yeah. He's got a ton of stuff and pictures that have never been seen. And so we're getting together for lunch next week, and I am very, very excited.
And anybody who hasn't been down to the Scott Joplin house, John Hancock saved that house as a part of your Eagle Scout project. And it's a bit of history right here in St. Louis as a result of you, my friend. Well, John, it is the divisional round of the NFL playoffs.
Love it.
Yes, it's been an exciting year. It's hard to believe that football's almost over for the year, isn't it?
Well, it's moving right along. Some really good games coming up.
Some new names in those games, too.
Yeah.
Not some of the old staples.
Well, the Chicago Bears haven't been there in over a decade. And, it's going to be some great games. So you got Buffalo-Denver. That's the first game on Saturday afternoon.
In Denver.
Denver had the bye with the best record in the AFC. I think the Bills win this game. Josh Allen is a force in the playoffs.
He's arguably the best player in the NFL.
Yeah.
I think the Denver Broncos are going to be awfully hard to beat at home at Mile High. I'll take the Denver Broncos there, but that game will be on Saturday at 3:30. Later that evening, it'll be in a West Coast showdown. Is the San Francisco 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, the other team that had the bye. You know, Sam Darnold, the quarterback for Seattle, is dealing with an oblique injury. I'm going to take the visiting 49ers in this game.
Wow, I've got the hometown Seattle Seahawks winning for no other reason than this isn't a game I even give a snot about. It's not that interesting to me. Now, this one is... brings back an old name with a new name on Sunday at 2 o'clock on ABC. The Houston Texans will take on the New England Patriots without the GOAT, but the game will be up there in Foxborough. It seems to me that this could be the resurgence of the New England Patriots. Give me the Patriots.
Buddy, the Houston Texans have the best defense in football, and C.J. Stroud, the quarterback of that team, I think is adequate enough. Houston wins this game.
And a game that will have everybody personally invested in this region, I believe. The former St. Louis Rams, now the L.A. Rams, owned by Stan Kroenke, take on the Chicago Bears at night in Chicago, Soldier Field, 5:30 Sunday night. Bear down, Bears. Let's go.
It's going to be 8-0 wind chill in Chicago. The Los Angeles Rams, not known for cold weather performance. The Bears are going to win this game and go to the NFC Championship and perhaps Super Bowl 60.
Could you imagine? Can you imagine if we get to the Super Bowl? Hey, let's not forget we get a bonus game Monday night, John. That's the national championship game that's taking place down at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. Guess who's in the game?
Indiana.
The University of Miami.
Well, it's Tom Ackerman against Kevin Wheeler. And we'll find out, I think and hope, that Indiana wins that football game.
Hoosiers. Let's go, Hoosiers.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
So I have to forward some tickets to you for something you're going to go to.
Yes.
And asking you to be able to secure tickets digitally is almost impossible because the other day you were having trouble with a Google Doc, John Hancock.
You know, you got the spreadsheet out there, you know, the Microsoft Excel.
Right.
And you got your little columns, your little rows, you know. I'm good with the Microsoft Excel.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody sends me a thing the other day, and you have to, I don't know what it is. It's a Google Doc, whatever that is, and you've got to request access to it, and, you know, and then apparently it's some sort of Excel spreadsheet. Well, you can't save it out of the Google Doc. All I wanted was a spreadsheet, Michael. Just give me the spreadsheet. No, they send me this thing, and then you got a request, and then you got to click on it, and then you can look at it, and I guess, why?
Do you want to go back to, old-time ledgers and green shades sitting under a lamp? Would that be the way that John Hancock would like to conduct business?
I do like the ledger.
Well,
you know, when I write my checks for my bills every month,
yeah,
I create a little ledger there.
Do you really?
Yeah, and I got here's Ameren over here. You got Spire coming at you.
Oh, brother.
And you make a little ledger and you write the little check and you lick the envelope there.
Yeah,
the envelopes. You know, somebody ought to invent an envelope that's tasty.
Right.
Have you ever had a tasty envelope? No, you've not.
Like tastes like lemon or something?
Exactly.
Really?
I mean, how hard is it?
Have you ever
gotten the
envelopes where
be?
You pull the sticker off and that way
yes.
you don't have to lick
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. No,
that
those
seems
are
silly.
No fuss. No, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
That's an improvement in the technology.
Uh-huh.
But the actual sticker itself on the back of an envelope, why hasn't somebody come up?
You got to know somebody over at Hallmark.
This is
Couldn't
our
you
business,
tell
buddy.
Somebody over in Hallmark
this is our
land?
Business. Flavored envelope sticker, whatever you call that thing, flaps.
Yeah.
Flavored flaps. Flavored flaps is the name of the company.
It's a great idea. The problem is nobody really sends mail anymore. And,
I do.
If you live in the city of St. Louis like me, you barely ever get your mail. So what's the point of having envelopes?
A flavored flap.
Hey, John, speaking
yes.
of backward thinking and going back in time, the governor of our great state of Missouri gave
yes.
the state of the state the other day,
he
and
did.
His big announcement was, I'm going to do away with the state income tax.
Yes.
That's nearly 60% of the revenue that comes into the state. At the time that he announced this, the state's already short on money. The only way we can eliminate the state income tax is if we raise taxes elsewhere and put those taxes in as, sales taxes. This obviously is something that the Republicans and people of means really like, but if you're a working person out there trying to make ends meet and all of a sudden the sales tax goes up by another 6-7%, how is this a win? Isn't the state income tax the fairest way for us to be able to fund state government?
No. In fact, if you look at the sales tax, and it won't be sales tax only that replaces the income tax. A couple of points here. Number one, the governor is not going to, in one fell swoop, eliminate the state income tax. They're going to phase it out over a period of time, and they're going to replace that revenue. Some of that will be sales tax. Now, the state of Missouri has, and I can't cite numbers. I wish I could, but I can't because I don't know them. But a significant portion of the sales tax revenue that's generated in Missouri is from out-of-state tourists. So what you're doing here is you're replacing a big chunk, 60%, you say. I'm not sure if that number's accurate, but whatever. I'll grant you that it's 60%.
Thank you.
But all of which is paid by Missourians. And when you shift that burden from Missourians to sales tax, a significant chunk of that is going to be paid for from by folks that don't live here. So I think that's a win. Our income tax in Missouri is a flat tax, which means it disproportionately affects folks on the lower income side. And the sales tax is no different in that regard. And whether in the details of this thing, there's some kind of accommodation made for low-income folks on the sales tax, perhaps that's part of the solution. But I think not having a sales tax makes Missouri competitive with a lot of other, there's 11 states in this country that don't have a income tax.
But what we can surely anticipate is that taxes are going to get raised elsewhere. They're going to have to be paid elsewhere. Let's think about businesses. We have a major brewery here in St. Louis. We make airplanes to protect our country and sell them around the world. Would they now start paying higher taxes as a result of the goods that they bring in to create their beer or to make their planes?
Possible. I think corporate taxes are an area that could be used. But, you know, the thing that what the governor has proposed is to put before the people of Missouri, if they a measure to for them to vote on if they would like to eliminate their state income tax. And then that would then direct the legislature to devise a plan to phase out that income tax over a period of years and replace it with other revenue.
Boy, I can see the ads now. Mike Kehoe raised all these taxes on you. Hey, speaking of taxes, in the city of St. Louis, you pay the earnings tax. You and I give them 1%. Mayor Kara Spencer was down in Jefferson City yesterday on bended knee, pleading with the legislature and those in power to please not take away the earnings tax from the city of St. Louis, because that's the way they fund this vital government. Of course, it's up for a vote again as to whether or not we ought to phase out the earnings tax in the city.
Yeah, you know, the earnings tax should go away, you know, and it's already been heavily damaged through the COVID years of people that were not working in the city. You know, they were working from home and they didn't live here, and they argued before the court that they shouldn't have to pay the 1% earnings tax in the city, and the courts agreed with that. So there's already been a diminution of the earnings tax revenue to the city of St. Louis, and I wish they could figure out a way to fund themselves without taxing the income of the people who work here.
Yeah, and if they would spend all the money they have. They have $100 million in tornado relief dollars that they were going to spend for that tornado that happened almost a year ago. John, you know how much of that they spent?
Zero.
Can you believe that?
Unbelievable. We're going to step aside. When we come back, the president of Missouri Baptist University, Keith Ross, is going to join us. What they've done with their nursing program is remarkable. That's next on KMOX.
Hancock and Kelly with you all the way till 10 o'clock. John, you know, Washington University and St. Louis University get a lot of attention in St. Louis, but one thing that's common with them is they're both expensive. There are some more affordable and quality alternatives in the St. Louis area.
Yeah, and you know, you think about this region and the higher education opportunities that exist. You think about UMSL. And one of the jewels of St. Louis is Missouri Baptist University. And joining us right now to talk about that university is its president, Keith Ross. Keith, welcome to KMOX.
Hey, good to be with you guys. So, thank you for having me this morning.
We're delighted to have you. Interesting history of Missouri Baptist University. Tell us how it got started and where it's headed now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. Thank you for asking. Most people, many of your listeners probably don't know that, but last year we celebrated our 60th anniversary. So 1964 when the school was actually founded. We began at humble beginnings. Our first classes met at Tower Grove Baptist Church. We had a handful of people that met there, and we started offering classes, and we have grown over these 60 years to almost 3,000 students today. So we've been really blessed and excited about the growth over these 60 years. So that's where we're at now, and we've got a lot of things on the horizon, particularly in the healthcare area that we are focusing on. And you guys mentioned this idea about affordability. That's something that's always on our radar screen too.
Yeah, and you know, it's so hard these days, families, kids going off to college, and I think increasingly folks are sticking closer to home for that affordability. Your student, 3,000 students, and you've got a pretty diverse mix of students too, all ages even.
Yeah, we do. And I think that's one of the things that we have been able to do proactively over the years. On our West County main campus, we have about 1,200 students. So that would be sort of our traditional, student body on the campus here. And about 400 of those live here on campus. But then we also have a vibrant online program. And our MBU Online is designed for mostly for working adults. So they might have some college credit, but they never finished their degree. And we have about 400 individuals that are involved in those programs. And then we have almost 800 students in graduate programs. And that ranges from an MBA to a Master of Science in Nursing, a Master's in Social Work. So we are meeting the needs of the community in many, many ways.
And we all know that St. Louis is a region of excellence when it comes to healthcare, and you're helping fill that gap of necessary nursing. Tell us a little bit about your nursing program.
Yeah, well, that's really, I think, an important point, because, as you know, there is a shortage of healthcare workers, and particularly that's for a lot of reasons. Some of them have to do with the pandemic and those moving out of that field. Others are retiring, and then also just the aging demographic. So we want to make sure that the St. Louis region has the trained healthcare workers that they're going to need in the future. And so what we have a traditional nursing program here for those who want to get their BSN. We have a very vibrant school of nursing. But then we also have a program for those who may be an RN right now and they did not get their bachelor's degree. And so we offer an online alternative for them to be able to go from RN to BSN. And then most recently, we have begun offering an accelerated Bachelor of Science in Nursing program. And this is designed for those who already have a bachelor's degree in some other field. And if they come to Missouri Baptist University in 1 year's time, they can become a BSN, get their BSN, become a nurse. And so that has grown as well. And then, of course, we have a Master's of Science in Nursing, which is offered online, and there's an emphasis for nurse practitioners, and that's an important segment too, because often rural communities don't have access to the proper health care that they need. So nurse practitioners can do a little bit more. They can prescribe antibiotics and those kind of things. So we see this as a good niche for us. It complements the mission of the university, and so tremendous growth in those areas.
Keith Ross is our guest. He's the president of Missouri Baptist University. If you folks haven't seen the campus lately, it is growing and vibrant, Keith.
Yes, it is. I would invite your listeners to come out. We're nestled on 68 acres out off of Highway 40 in West St. Louis County, and it is one of the most beautiful campuses in the Midwest. And I really do mean that. We have a great, great community. It's warm, it's welcome, it's winsome. And we would love to have you come out. And matter of fact, we are in a building project right now. So we're building a new academic building that will house our School of Nursing on campus. And so that's going well. And I am looking out my window right now and watching them put the steel up today. So this is exciting.
That is Missouri Baptist University. Thanks so much for your time this morning. And Chris and Amy are next right here on KMOX.
Hey y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Reality Gaze, let's love.